Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Alrighty, welcome to the Celtics Lab podcast, the last episode of the regular season. I'm your host, Cameron McFly. I'm joined by Alex Kuhlberg. The Celtics Lab podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network, and BetterHelp. You deserve to be happy. We're going to talk about the regular season that was. We're going to talk about some end-of-season awards. We're going to try to explain a few things about the CBA. And to do all of that, we welcome in from Celtics Blog, from Heavy.com, from the How About Them Celtics podcast, my friend and yours, Jack Simone. Jack, what is up?
Not that much. Thank you for having me. I didn't know this was the last podcast of regular season. I feel special now. This is great. Thank you.
Yeah. No, we were a weekly. So unless there are protested outcomes on the part of the Celtics, I think we're done here on Sunday. I know we're done for the regular season on Sunday. I think the play-in games are Tuesday and Wednesday. And I think the first Celtics game, playoff game, will be Sunday of next week. I think that's the 16th, but none of that has been officially released. Anyways, Alex, Jack, how are you?
I've had some better weeks. My ankle is currently hurting a lot. My cat just got a bunch of teeth yanked out of his head, so he's on drugs and bumping around into things. And Tennessee democracy is collapsing, but that's neither here nor there. So, you know, just getting through it. One thing I will say is that the C's are coming through for me, though, so we're all right.
Yeah, we'll call it even then.
Right.
Jack, how are you? Long time no see.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Similar to Alex, but been better weeks, but, you know, we keep on rolling. The Celtics have sort of figured things out after their, you want to call it a collapse post-All-Star break, whatever you want to say. Their bumpy road, their rocky road post-All-Star break. Yeah, okay, that's a better word, the hiccup. So yeah, it's nice to see them back on track again. It's a more fun environment on Twitter at the very least.
Yes, the mood is a little better. Although, quite frankly, if we're being really honest, clicks and podcast listens are down. So if the Celtics fans could get it together, that would be great. Justin has in our notes, Justin is off this week, that we have to talk about UConn winning the NCAA tournament, but I went to the University of Pittsburgh, so I'm not going to do that. And instead, I'm going to say, hey, Justin Champagne, welcome to the Boston Celtics, although that also hasn't been officially released. Jack and Alex, what is official is that the Boston Celtics have locked up the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. Jack, I'll go to you first. Given the speed bumps or the rocky road or whatever, is the 2 seed a point of pride or a disappointment?
It's good. I will say before that, I will make Justin happy because I did bet on UConn before the tournament started. So I was maybe a very happy guy when they took it home. But the 2 seed's good. And on How About Them Celtics, I host with Sam LaFrance, who writes for Heavy as well. And he was less happy about the fact that they're the 2 seed than I was last time we spoke. He initially used the word embarrassing because he was just mad that they lost the 1 seed. I calmed him down a little bit and we used the term disappointing that they couldn't keep up the 1 seed chase. But even that, like, I personally don't think it's a big deal. Like when you consider the context of the Bucks won on a 16 game win streak, Giannis is arguably the MVP. We don't have to get into that conversation, but I think he's probably up there. They've sort of gotten in groove after Chris Middleton came back. They found some health. The Celtics were dealing with their own things. Jaylen Brown was out for a little bit. Marcus Smart, Robert Williams has been in and out. So there's some rough spots there. And the way I kind of contextualized it was, the struggles post All-Star break that sort of saw them slip into the 2 seed rather than the 1 seed probably should have happened at the start of the year. If you think about it, like Joe Mazzulla, new head coach coming in, there's going to be some bumps. Robert Williams not in the lineup, probably were going to be some bumps, but they just kind of ran with it. And so I think it should have been expected that this team, with all the new things coming in, Brogdon in the lineup, Rob out, Missoula, new head coach coming in, all the drama before season with Udoka, like there was going to be a bump in the road at some point. It just happened later than a lot of people expected. So all things considered, 2 seed, good. No really complaints for me.
Yeah, not too much to add there, Jack. The only thing that I would throw in, and I largely agree with basically everything you said. The only thing that I would throw in is that one of the things I saw is that Celtics, there some, not all, but some Celtics fans are concerned about the possibility of a road series in Milwaukee. Mm. To that point, I guess I would throw out that while with respect to the Bucks, who are a very good basketball team, and if they win the title this year, I would not be super surprised by that. It's not like the Celtics haven't shown us they can win on the road in the playoffs. They have done it. They did it last year in the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 6 critical win in Milwaukee last year. Like, the Celtics can win on the road. They have a good record on the road. This is going to be about matchups and health more than anything. So I don't think the Celtics are particularly concerned that they're the 2 seed. I think they feel pretty confident that they can win in just about any building in the NBA. And all things considered, I think something that might be more important for Boston than necessarily winning the 1 seed outright is making sure that they potentially have home court in a finals series, which they can achieve by getting one more win or one more Denver loss. In that situation, whether they are the 2 seed or not, they would still have a better record than every team in the Western Conference. And thus, they would have home court in the finals. Obviously, last year, they didn't have home court in the finals, and it cost them pretty dearly as a result. So I think we've seen that the Celtics can win on the road. They're definitely capable of that. I don't think, given how well they've played the Bucks this year, that they are like terribly concerned about the possibility of going into Milwaukee and beating them in a road series. But I do think that getting one more win on the ticker just to make sure that you potentially have home court in a finals matchup could be something worthwhile for this team and worth hanging their hat on.
Yeah, Alex, while you're saying that, I am looking at the NBA standings and I'm just going to in real time react to something I'm noticing, which is astounding. So to your point, the Celtics are a good road team. The Bucks are a good road team. The 76ers are a good road team. So check this out. The Bucks are 26-14 on the road. The Celtics are 25-16. The 76ers are 23-16. And on balance, the Knicks are 24-16. And even the Nets are 22-19. In the Western Conference, the Nuggets are 19-20 on the road. The Grizzlies are 15-24. The Kings are 25-15. But then the Suns are 17-23. And the Warriors, obviously, are putrid on the road. I don't know, maybe it's always the case the Western Conference struggles on the road and I've just never noticed it, but not only, Alex, to your point that the Celtics are one win away from, if they made it to the finals, having home court, but if they faced a team in the finals, that might be a big deal because it seems like the class of the West is not very good on the road. That's fascinating. Sorry, I just am reacting to that in real time. I kind of want to split the difference. I would use the word embarrassing insofar as we can probably list the losses that if the Celtics were maybe a little more engaged or a little luckier or something like that, they would have had in the bag and things would be different. Jack, I do think the point that the Bucks were just really damn good at the right time is pretty pertinent. And I'd also say, I don't know what the seeding projections were preseason, but I know the Celtics were slated for 54 wins. In a lot of places, and they have a chance at their 56th win tomorrow night. So they're about where we thought they were going to be, maybe a smidge better. And on and off the court challenges notwithstanding, that's pretty good.
Just one more thing to add in. I think a lot of people were concerned about the idea that whichever team wound up in the 2 seed would have to face both Philly and Milwaukee, which are considered the two kind of class of the East teams outside of Boston. I'll tell you this right now. Boston Celtics are not particularly afraid of the Philadelphia 76ers, and I don't think they should be. They have played that team great all year. The Sixers barely beat the Celtics the other night, and we'll get into that in just a little bit on a shorthanded team. And like really escaped by the skin of their teeth. I don't think they're afraid of the Sixers at all. And frankly, I think they're kind of doing a little bit of a disservice to this Cleveland team, which is starting to pick up some real momentum. In particular, Donovan Mitchell is starting to pick up some real momentum as the playoffs kind of come into view. That guy, listen, I know the Utah Jazz underperformed relative to their expectations in the playoffs a couple of years in a row, it was not the fault of Donovan Mitchell. That guy is a killer in the postseason. And I don't think any team that's going up against the Cavs should just write them off in the second round at all.
Yeah, quite frankly, a second round matchup between either the Knicks or the Cavs might be more physically taxing than the Sixers, at least for the Celtics. I mean, with respect to the other teams in the East, I think Bucks Celtics is a pretty good bet for the conference finals, but you know, that is still 5 or 6 weeks away. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. Speaking of that Sixers loss and what was frankly probably a little too close of a Raptors win last night, Jack, where are you at with just the Celtics as the season wraps? So much of the data that we want to use to justify our opinions and stuff, it really has to do with momentum and stuff. So let's just talk about where the Celtics are at right now. What are you seeing that you're liking, worried about, would like to see different, and on and on and on.
Yeah, I think the last two games, like you mentioned, Raptors, Sixers, the Raptors win definitely got a little closer than you might have wanted. And the Sixers game, Celtics probably, realistically, they probably should have won. They were in a position to win, and then the offense kind of just collapsed at the end there, went cold. And I think both of those are because, I mean, you're missing starters. You're missing Jalen and Rob in the Sixers game. You're missing three starters in Marcus Horford and Jason, in the Raptors loss. And so when you're missing one of those two star players, the Celtics are still capable of winning. But I feel like the offense goes downhill a lot because Jason's cold, having a cold shooting night. If somebody else is not, finding a rhythm in the fourth quarter, the Celtics kind of don't really know where to turn to. And luckily in the Raptors game, Derek White, Malcolm Brogdon both had big games, and that really helped elevate them. And in the Sixers game, Marcus Smart just made a ridiculous couple plays down the stretch to get them back in the game after, I will say, probably a not so great stretch to help them be out of the game in the first place. But I wasn't too concerned with the Sixers loss, especially when you're seeing what is arguably one of the most dominant offensive performances I've seen all season from Joel Embiid. I mean, I did the math for an article I wrote for Celtics blog. He took 25 shots as in field goal attempts. He obviously took some more shots that ended up being free throws because he was fouled. But of the 25 field goal attempts he took, 8 were in the restricted area. He went 8 for 8 on those. And then he took 17 jumpers and he shot 12 of 17 on jumpers. And if Joel Embiid's going to make 12 of 17 jumpers, there's really not much you're going to be able to do to slow him down. And so, and then even when you do double him, PJ Tucker decides to make 3 threes for the first time in I don't even know how long. So at that point, you kind of just, you wipe your hands clean. You think it's funny that they almost won anyways because the Sixers collapsed and you move on. And then the Raptors game. I never have a real problem with the Celtics struggling a little bit in the fourth quarter, late in games, especially when they're without Jason Tatum. And I'll give them credit. Like in those Nets, Knicks, Cavs games, a lot of the discourse me and Sam talked about at the very least, and I'm sure a lot of people talked about it as well, was like, you really wish they could just hold on to leads. And even when they were faced with the adversity of the Raptors coming back and tying it at one point, they still bounced back and they still kept their lead and still maintained their composure and they pushed forward. And like Joe Mazzulla said this once during a post-game presser, like the NBA is the NBA. Teams are going to make runs. Teams are going to come back. And the only thing you can do is adapt and respond. And that's kind of what they did against the Raptors. So you combine those with the win and the loss, Philly, Toronto, with the big win against Milwaukee with two fully healthy teams for all intents and purposes. The Wizards loss was obviously a nice little stain there. You kind of want to forget about, but that was a thing. But then you go back past that, went over Utah, went over Sacramento, went over the Spurs, like a few good wins there. You're feeling good about where the Celtics are heading into the playoffs. You'll feel a lot better if they win these last two games, but don't really know who they're going to play. So that's a big question mark too. But from what they've shown in the games where it matters, i.e. Milwaukee, i.e. Philadelphia, even though they were down guys, I'm feeling pretty confident because it feels like this team, for as much as they play down to their competition when they face off against teams like the Rockets and the Wizards, they also play good teams really, really well. I would have to do the math, but probably better than most other teams in the league.
Well, I mean, you don't have to do too much math. They certainly do play better. And in fact, I believe the case is that as of now, the Celtics, when playing against top three seeds in either conference, just doing math off the top of my head, apologies if I get this wrong, but I believe they are currently 11-3 against the top three seeds in the Eastern Conference. So I think you're right on the money, Jack. The Celtics seem to rise to the occasion against high level opponents pretty much whenever. They haven't played the new look Phoenix Suns at all. That's pretty much the only team I can think of that is like an upper echelon team that they don't really have much data on. But outside of that, I mean, this, and this has been consistent all season, when the lights are brightest and when the competition is at its best, the Celtics have stepped up time and time again. And, you know, they have these three losses, but in two of those losses, they had multiple players out. And in one of them, it was a road game against Denver in which they shot 27% from deep. You're not going to win a lot of games shooting like that. So all in all, I think the data speaks for itself. Boston is elite against the best teams.
Yeah, it's funny. Last night, Malcolm Brogdon, not directly, but was basically asked, hey, are you guys going to sit guys down the stretch now that you have the two seed locked up? And he said, it's really important that we go into the regular season with momentum. And Missoula said something as such, you know, they're creatures of habit. They need to simulate things because they could be off for about a full week. Brogdon, Smart, Pritchard, and White are all questionable for Friday's game. And I don't think any of them, I mean, maybe Smart really does need to be on ice, but I'm curious about that. Yeah, I think both of you are spot on. I mean, the Celtics are probably a little big for their britches and that they haven't always gotten up for seemingly lesser opponents. And you can get blitzed pretty easily in the NBA. The talent is really good. The three-point shooting introduces new levels of variance. Probably the Celtics haven't earned the right to coast in the regular season the way like LeBron certainly has set that up for himself. But I do think the returns are very, very good and recently have been very, very good. That, I don't know, it's interesting. We flirt with this concept a lot in the season, like what is statistically significant. But at the same time, players' roles change, players come back from injury reports, like new rotations emerge. And so how valuable the season-long data is, I'm not 100% sure. I will say, and Missoula was quite proud of this, that the Celtics are back in the top three in offense and defense, I believe, and net rating as well. And again, maybe regular season stats are fluky or what have you, but those are usually good predictive measures of quite competitive teams. And I think this point last year, the Celtics were number one in defense by a country mile, but not as dialed in on offense. So we've talked about it. Giannis is really damn good, and we don't want to forget that the rest of the Bucks are really damn good. I'm the number one supporter of Drew Holiday making all NBA first team, but I also think that the Celtics are
that's nuts. First team, wow.
I would take third team. I think first team is ambitious.
I think that it's ambitious knowing how the award works. If I were picking guards in the NBA that I would want on my basketball team, he would be one of two. And I feel really good about that, because do you know what he does better than almost anyone else in any NBA backcourt is play some fucking defense. And Dame Lillard doesn't play defense. Donovan Mitchell doesn't play defense.
I can think of a couple of guys who wear green. I can think of a couple of guys who wear green.
Do they play offense as well as Drew Holiday?
I think you could argue that Derek White is playing about that level right now. We'll see.
No. That's a preposterous
Homer take. We did our all NBA projections on the other show, and I think the conversation ended with me saying I wish there was a place for Drew Holiday. So I know I left him off mine. But I can't argue that he doesn't deserve to be on a team, because he probably does. I forget who exactly my guards were. I think I had I think I had Donovan Mitchell and Luka on first team. We had a bar, so I couldn't put Steph on because he didn't have enough games played or something like that. Because we at the time we did 70% of the game, so it was 52. But I remember just knowing that I left Drew off and I felt bad about it. But there was it was him, Jalen Brunson, that both weren't on a team, and it's just there's so many guards in the NBA nowadays that are playing really well, and it's tough. I respect it. That first team might be a little too rich for my blood, though.
19 points per game, 7.4 assists, 5 rebounds, 1.5 steals, and 0.5 a block. I mean, and I will add that I didn't know this. Drew Holiday's nickname is the Druth. So, boom, he's on the first team. Okay, wow. Quickly, let's just be real. The CBA stuff has come and gone. We are not the smartest spoons in the drawer to discuss this stuff. So we could talk about it briefly, but I quite frankly would recommend seeking out people like Yossi Goslin or Danger Cart, Ryan Bernadoni, people who really live and breathe the Capology stuff. We can quickly make mention of the Jaylen rule and a few other things if we want. But first, I do want to point out, and Jack, you were there for this, when Jalen was asked about the CBA, he seemed most proud of the player empowerment by way of investment and not quite content with some things related to players' social media autonomy and things like that. So I think that there are elements of this that are quite player friendly and some elements that are quite team friendly. I think some of the squishy stuff, it sounds like maybe the Players Association wishes that they got more. So a good compromise leaves everyone unhappy, I suppose, but it means that for the next 6 or 7 years that NBA and the PA have a CBA, alphabet soup. Just quickly, I made mention of the Jalen rule. So basically what that means is extensions are now up to 140% of a player's salary. Is that what it is? As opposed to 120%. And it's being called the Jalen Brown rule because he's just in this perfect sweet spot where it's going to go into effect the year that he would be eligible for an extension. And really, he's the only high-profile player with the right years of service or lack thereof for this to take effect, which is probably not suspicious and coincidental, actually. But it does mean that the Celtics, even if Jalen doesn't make All-NBA, can offer Jalen Brown more money in an extension. That doesn't mean that Jalen would take it because it's not as good as the All-NBA extension. And maybe he doesn't want to take it anyways. Anything I missed on the Jalen extension thing? And then we can chew the fat about the other stuff.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we're good. The only other thing that I think might be interesting is, at least as far as Jalen is concerned, is if indeed the equity thing is something that he cares about, then one card that the Celtics might be able to play, obviously they'd have to go through the ownership group to figure this out, but one card that the Celtics might be able to play that other franchises might not is giving some level of equity in the franchise as a condition of his re-signing.
Well, so I'll push back on that. What I've been told is it's that there will be like mutual funds not shell corporations, what's that?
Yeah.
Like holding groups. So
yeah.
A player can't own 1% of a team, which I do get where the Players Association is coming from. Lots of employees own equity in their workplace, and it's not a conflict of interest. But I don't think that the rule, we don't know yet, it hasn't been announced. I don't think it would be that A to B, Alex, but maybe. I don't know. Let's do this. Let's pause the action. Let's talk about our friends over at FanDuel, and then we'll get back into the CBA if we'd like. Grand slams, no hitters, and double plays are back, and there's no better place to get in on the MLB action than FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, an official partner of Major League Baseball. And new customers in Mass can get in on the action with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/Boston. Finally, you can bet on all your favorite sports, from the money line to point spreads to player props and more. Alex and Jack, the Boston Red Sox, are very good at hitting the ball and not very good at pitching the ball. How do you feel about the Red Sox off the jump real quick?
Yeah, I mean, I think the pitching concerns are the big thing for me and have been for a while now. You know, I'm feeling kind of cautiously, slightly more optimistic about the Red Sox, that they aren't going to be the complete dumpster fire that I thought they were going to be heading into the regular season. I think they will probably be like a mid-tier, like borderline wild card team if they get hot. But I'm having a hard time seeing them win the World Series, put it that way.
Well, if you're feeling ambitious about your own Major League Baseball predictions, you can use an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use, and that would be FanDuel. Don't miss your chance to get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. Visit FanDuel.com/Boston and make every moment more. FanDuel, official Major League partner of Major League Baseball. You must be 21 and older and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit is required. The bonus is issued as a non-withdrawable bonus bet that will expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline, ma.org, or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. Okay, back to the CBA. Any specific rules you want to shout out that has caught your eye or that you're interested in or concerned about? If not, we'll move it into the lab portion of the program. Yeah, Alex.
I have one, which is the addition of a third Supermax slot on top of teams that already have two Supermax guys under contract. So this rule is a little bit hazy, but I believe the main thing is that it would open up the ability of teams to retain two Supermax guys that they already have under contract while still adding a third Supermax player. So in theory, if Boston decides at some point during the near future how this affects them, that they would need to consolidate their depth into potentially a third star player to go with Jason Tatum and a re-signed Jaylen Brown at a Supermax should he make all NBA. That is something that they could do. Now, with the tax ceiling being what it is and the elimination of the taxpayer MLE, this would be a situation where the Celtics would be parlaying much of their depth into a third Supermax player and then rolling out probably something reminiscent of the 2011 Miami Heat, a big three with basically nothing outside of ring chasers for depth. So this would be logistically complicated for them for a number of reasons. In addition, the fact that they can't trade draft picks 7 years out now, it would be really hard to make that team happen just from a logistics standpoint, but they now could do it in theory to have three Supermax guys and build a big three in Boston if that's an option that they wanted to pursue in the future. Obviously, right now, there doesn't seem to be an obvious candidate that they would want to do that with. I think one of the things that the Celtics have found success with is their depth this year, and so I think they would be loath to do that at the current state of things, but the NBA moves fast. You never know how these things go. And I imagine once the new cap figure comes in, that there are going to be some teams in the arms race fashion that are going to try and do exactly that. And so the Celtics might be in a situation sometime in the next few years, assuming they keep Jaylen Brown, where they might be pressured into a similar situation.
I don't know. Donovan Mitchell seems like he gets along with Jaylen and Jason. I don't know. Yeah, again, the CBA is chock full of interesting tidbits. I mean, and more information will come out. So I encourage people who are curious to find sources who are a little more polished when it comes to talking about that stuff. But there are things that very much so could impact Boston Celtics quite directly moving forward. Importantly, it seems like cap smoothing will be a thing should there be any big jumps in the salary cap based on new television deals or anything like that. So Timofey Mozgov and Evan Turner contracts from 2016 probably won't be popping up in the same way. Although we rooted for the Celtics privately and they didn't really have any of those monster contracts. So that was kind of a fun era. I can imagine being a Trailblazers fan or a Lakers fan or a fan of a team that laced up one of those contracts and being a little annoyed. So whatever. Anyways, what we're going to do in the lab portion of the programming is look backwards and forwards. First, I'm going to ask you about some of the end of season awards that the Celtics are probably in line to compete for, if not outright take home. And later, we'll talk a little bit about possible first round matchups. So that's where we're going next in the lab portion of the programming. And we can go down the list. But first, speaking of hardware, we've already seen some awards given out. The Tommy Point Award or the Tommy Award went to Malcolm Brogdon, who we'll get to shortly, this past week. And then last night, Jaylen Brown won the Red Auerbach Award. So some members of the Celtics have already gotten some nice trophies. But Malcolm Brogdon is... Actually, Jack, you're the perfect person for this. So Malcolm Brogdon is number two in Sixth Man of the Year odds. Thank you, FanDuel, at plus 230. And Emmanuel Quickly is the leader at minus 310. And just anecdotally, Jack and I were sitting next to each other at the Knicks game a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Jack goes, I think Quickly is going to have a big game. And Quickly had a big game. So Jack, your boy, Emmanuel Quickly, is the front runner to be Sixth Man of the Year. Do either of you think that Brogdon ends up winning that award?
I mean, I love Quickly. Like, I'm a fan of Quickly from a completely neutral perspective. I think he's great. I really don't know, like, outside of maybe his off-ball defense, because it's played a big role for the Knicks, I don't get his case over Brogdon, other than he's had a good late stretch and, you know, the narrative is shifting in his favor. Like, consistency over the course of the year, Malcolm Brogdon has been there the entire season. His team is better. He's playing, you know, I don't know if he's playing more minutes. I think he's playing less minutes, but he's averaging more points. I think he's been the more overall well-rounded player. I think you could argue that Quickley's maybe had, like, a more noticeable impact on the Knicks because they exceeded expectations. But, like, if you really get down to it, the impact Brogdon has had on the Celtics has been huge. Without him, they don't win some of these games. He stepped up and he's been a secondary scorer when one of the Jays have been out. Like, I really don't understand why he's not the favorite, to be quite honest. Like I feel like he should take home this award. I feel like he deserves the award. And with all due respect to Emmanuel Quickley, I feel like a big part of him being the favorite right now is because that's just what the narrative has been, because he's been hot. And I saw some back and forth on Twitter between Celtics and Knicks fans, which, as you can imagine, was very pleasant. Being like, you know, Quickley started an X amount of games, and Knicks fans said, yeah, because that's what the sixth man does when players are hurt, which is, like, also a very fair argument. But it's just like, I don't know. It just consistency over the course of the season, it feels like Brogdon has him beat. If Emmanuel Quickley wins the award, I'm not going to sit here and complain, because, like, he also deserves it. But I just feel like Brogdon deserves it more based on the entire body of work this season.
I just read the fine print. The line that I read to you is as of 9 p.m. on Sunday. So that could change. Malcolm had a really nice game last night, and FanDuel, if you're listening, we look forward to the updated odds. And listeners, if you can get that Malcolm Brogdon plus 230, go for it. You can also get Bobby Portis plus 6,500. I love Bobby Portis. Let me pause the action again and talk about our friends over at BetterHelp, and then we'll get more into this stuff. And we're really happy to be sponsored by BetterHelp, least of which because we think that there are some stigmas related to seeking support and online therapy. And, you know, one of the things I think people maybe misunderstand is that therapy isn't just for cataclysmic life events or when you're really, really down in the dumps. I know that I have some homies who, you know, they've got some life stuff going on, or their partners have some life stuff going on, and talking to someone for just a few sessions can really make a big difference. It doesn't have to be, this is a pivot point in my life. It can be, hey, some stuff is hit the fan and stuff, and I'd like to talk to someone about that. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should consider giving BetterHelp a try. It's all online. It's made to be convenient. It's made to be flexible. It's made to suit your schedule. It starts with a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch for no additional fee anytime you like. So if you don't like the person you're talking to, you can find another therapist. Once again, BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/selflab today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/selflab. Okay, so we feel good about Brogdon, sixth man. I'm going to pose one, and Alex, I'll let you go first on this one. I'm not expecting a affirmative answer, but Joe Mazzulla, coach of the year?
Nope. And that's not a slight to Joe Mazzulla at all. I think Joe Mazzulla has done a terrific job with the Boston Celtics, and I think he deserves all sorts of praise for managing the situation from the very beginning of the season to getting them out to more wins than even Vegas had them pegged at. And in general, I think a lot of the criticisms of Mazzulla from the Celtics fan base have been pretty wildly overblown. If you look at the numbers, and if you look at the record, Mazzulla consistently provides the Celtics with a chance to win games. Some of his ATOs and timeout calls may be a little bit less than desirable, but he has this team prepared and playing great basketball. And I think in general, he deserves his flowers and recognition for his part in that. That being said, the Coach of the Year award has been locked up for a few months now. Mike Brown is the overwhelming favorite to win Coach of the Year, and justifiably so, for bringing the Sacramento Kings back to the playoffs after 20 years in the desert. There is no chance that Joe Mazzulla is going to win because Mike Brown has had this award locked up.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, Jack. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody else besides Mike Brown wins this award, I think it would be one of the biggest upsets in recent memory. Like, to get the Kings not only into the playoffs, like, I think he would have won the award if he got the Kings to the sixth seed, but they're competing to be the two seed. I think they'll end up as a three seed, but like they have been one of the three teams in the West, not at risk of falling into the play-in in a Western conference that like most people like before the season, I expected them to miss the playoffs, not because I didn't think they'd be good, but because there's that many good teams in the Western Conference. And now they're the three seed. Like the fact that he's gotten that team together, and sure, they've had, you know, adjustments. They signed Kevin Herter. They brought in Malik Monk. You know, they drafted Keegan Murray. Domantas Sabonis has had more time to gel. The fact that he has that roster in this position, and I think I was talking to somebody last night about this. Like, I think the Kings are going to beat whoever they play in the first round. Like, they're that good. I think they're that talented, especially on offense. Sure, there's some defensive issues, but like, he's gotten them in such a good position and playing such good basketball that it would be a crime if he didn't win this award.
You were talking to Bobby.
I almost
hopped in and said, hey, what about the defense? You both are correct about that. I was being less facetious and more fair because I think Joe deserves. These awards are so weird. I mean, at the end of the day, they someone wins them, but we do this whole dog and pony show around making sure people are in the conversation. It's like, oh, great, Jason Tatum's fourth. Guess who doesn't win a trophy? The fourth place person. Now, I have been fastidiously looking at Jrue Holiday advanced stats, so I'll continue to lean on you two, but where's Jaylen Brown in the All-NBA conversation? And I think we're in agreement that he's decidedly in the conversation and not going to be taken out of it. Jack, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think he should be on an All-NBA team regardless of if he's a forward or not, which he is, by the way. He's a forward. Let's not be cute about it. He's played forward all season. They've always had two guards out there unless they've played the double big lineups, which they've played like maybe six times, right? Like not a lot. It's been Marcus Smart, Derek White in the starting lineup for almost the whole season. Even when they don't have Tatum, they play, Derek White and Sam Hauser at the guard and Jaylen Brown. He's a forward. Like he's played 60% of his minutes at small forward, power forward, and 40% at shooting guard. You know, 60s greater than 50%. He's a forward. He's played forward. And so I believe when I did my predictions, I had him on second team, you know, Tatum and Giannis on first team. I think it was Jaylen and Julius Randle on second team. And then third team forwards was something along the lines of Jimmy Butler and somebody else, because I had Sabonis as a center. But even if he's a guard, like you have to have Luka, and Donovan Mitchell. You have to have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But past that, I think it's kind of a toss-up. Like Steph Curry should be on there, but he's missed a lot of games, so that's a question mark. I don't know if people will look at that, especially with the new rules that don't take effect this year, but people will probably think about it when they're giving their votes. Jaylen Brown is the second best player on the second best team, or third best, I guess. I forget the Nuggets record, in the NBA, and he's averaging, like, put it this way. This is the way I put it into perspective for myself a couple weeks ago. Jaylen Brown is averaging effectively the same stats that Jason Tatum averaged last year when he was on the first team All-NBA. So the fact that we're even having a conversation that Jaylen Brown, who is averaging the same stats as somebody who was first team last year, might not even make a team this year just because there's somebody else better on his team, like that doesn't like make sense to me, right? Like the Kings are probably going to have two All-NBA players, right? Yep, and Cam, the Bucks should probably have two. It's your holiday right there, right? You look around the league, all these teams, you see, oh, the Sixers, does James Harden make it? Does, the Nuggets, they're probably not going to have anybody because Jokic is that good. But you look at the Celtics, and it's always been Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So the fact that one of the best teams in the league has somebody averaging, off the top of my head, I'm making this up, but it's probably around 27-6-4, and you're saying, oh, he might not make an All-NBA team, like, That just doesn't make sense. He is absolutely an All-NBA player. The only thing you can argue is which team should he be on.
Cool. Alex, anything we missed?
Not a tremendous amount to add. The only thing that I would throw in is that I think the field is a little bit more competitive than a lot of voters are necessarily letting on. Obviously, Julius Randle, as mentioned before, will be in the mix. I think at this point, it's pretty clear that Tatum and Giannis will be the first team All-NBA forwards. That seems pretty not up for debate at this point. But for second and third team, you've got Randle, you've got Jimmy Butler, you've got LeBron, who's always in contention for these things, Kevin Durant, even though both of those guys have missed some games, they've been having pretty terrific and stellar seasons when they've been on the court. Kawhi Leonard, of course. Like, it's not like there are any slouches in the mix for this set of awards. That being said, I think one advantage that Jaylen has over them in addition to his great stats and general contribution to a really high level winning basketball team, Jalen plays games. Jalen has been playing more than Kawhi Leonard, more than LeBron James, more than Kevin Durant. Like, this guy really has not missed a lot of time. He had a couple of brief spells where he would miss games with injuries here or there. But if you look at games played, Jalen has most of the other second and third team candidates beat just from a sheer like total number of games played standpoint. I think he did a lot to cement his case as well in these last couple of weeks, particularly his explosive win over the Spurs. And obviously the Spurs are headed for Wemby land. But that being said, you know, no Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown carried the team that night. He was terrific in the Bucks game. He's been kind of on fire lately, with the exception of a couple of games here and there. But in general, I think his case is as strong as any one of those other guys. And the fact that he's played more games than most other candidates and he's playing for one of the best teams in basketball, I think will weigh in his favor.
Plus, he's been on this media blitz, and I think that that's not for nothing. I mean, he's been in the conversation again and again and again. I would just shout out, I don't know, I suspect Sabonis will make it. I'd like to know if Markkanen is going to make it. I'm not sure if, you know, I think maybe the Jazz ran out of gas. Did you see that Markkanen is going to do his conscription service for the Finnish Army this summer?
Yes.
The Finnish Army that just joined NATO. Probably nothing, but, you know, that's a sentence that I didn't think I was going to say at the beginning of the year. Anyways, we won't spend more time here because, again, the play-in tournament will happen and it will come and go, and we'll know who the Celtics are playing soon enough, and you better believe it, we'll do a preview pod for all you wonderful people. But for now, we can talk about the teams they might face. I think in pen, it's Chicago, Toronto, and Atlanta will be in the play-in tournament. And then in pencil, it's Miami, because there is a world where Brooklyn and Miami swap places. Jack, we will do the following. I'm going to ask you to pick the opponent that, if you're the Boston Celtics, you would like to face the most out of that. And basically, it's almost definitely between that Miami-Atlanta pairing, but I think there's a chance that Chicago or Toronto, two games left. I think the Bulls are not an option, but you can talk about the Chicago if you want. Toronto could still eke their way in. So anyways, who are you most looking forward to matching up with if you're the Celtics?
Even if they could have faced the Nets, the Raptors, the Bulls, or the Heat, it's the Hawks by not close mile. Like, it's just the way they've played the Hawks over the past couple of years, first of all, is dominant, right? Like, they don't really have anybody who can defend Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. And if you don't have somebody who can at least defend one of those guys, let alone both, you're probably not going to beat the Celtics very much. They've been the definition of mid all season. Like, have you seen all those metrics? Weirdly, they've spent 79 straight days but within one game at 500, which does make you a little scared, because if they're a game below 500, you're probably going to lose. But at the same time, like, it's incredible how average they've been this season. And then you look at the other teams. The Bulls have given the Celtics some issues because of the rebounding and Nikola Vucevic and DeMar DeRozan's mid-range shot. The Raptors just play them annoyingly well because, you know, they're scrappy and Nick Nurse loves to stand on the sideline with his mouth open, you know, begging the refs for foul calls. And then the Heat, you look at Eric Spoelstra, probably one of the three best coaches in the league, four best coaches in the league. He's phenomenal. And Jimmy Butler turns into a monster in the playoffs. And even the Nets, like, they're a scrappy team with a lot of, you know, wing defenders who could probably give Tatum and Brown, just irritate them a little bit. The Hawks just don't even, like, make me blink a second. They might take one game because the Celtics get bored. But even if the Celtics play like they did against the Wizards for three games, I don't think it matters. The Hawks are just, they don't even strike fear in my heart at all. And after that, there's like a giant gap between anybody. I'd rather play the Hawks than the Magic or the Pacers or the Wizards. I'll put it that way. And they're not even in the play-in, right? Like, the Hawks don't scare me in the slightest.
Let me just clarify. First of all, tremendous. I hope Amit clips that part for social media, because that was wonderful. I was explaining things as if the Celtics were the one seed, and they're not. They're the two seed. So they could faced the Bulls pretty cleanly. So respect to the Bulls. Sorry, Alex. I am pretty confident that you agree with Jack, but
yeah.
either pile on or zigzag a little.
I mean, I think the reality is that the Celtics should be considered heavy favorites in matchups against any one of those teams. I don't particularly think this version of the Miami Heat is anywhere close to last year's horrifying version of the Miami Heat. The loss of PJ Tucker has impacted them pretty significantly. And in general, I think there's a lot of holes in their rotation that a better Boston team with better ball handling, particularly Brogdon, could really exploit. Obviously, you know, Bam, Jimmy, Spo, you never really want to go against those guys in a playoff atmosphere. But this Miami team is not last year's Miami's team. So I don't think they should be striking fear in our hearts in the same way. That being said, the Hawks are the clear favorite here. Boston annihilates the Hawks. And I think just from a play style standpoint alone, when the playoffs come around, matchup hunting becomes a much more prominent thing that you see teams go to when shots are not falling, offense isn't working, whatever. And boy, do the Hawks have a glaring and obvious matchup to hunt in Trae Young, a guy who just can't defend anybody on the Celtics team. Like, I think he would struggle to defend Peyton Pritchard. Trae Young is one of the worst defensive players in the NBA and will be sticking out like a glaring sore thumbtack every time that the Celtics see him. So I would love to play the Hawks, but I'm not really worried about any of these teams.
So not to... it happens. Alex is having a little bit of mic issues, and you might have heard some static at the beginning. And so he's been sitting more still to eliminate the static, and the static came back because he was so physically and viscerally piling on the Hawks just now that that's why the static came back, because his whole body was engaged in making it clear that the Hawks are stinky at basketball. The Hawks are stinky at basketball. We don't need to belabor that point. Yeah, I hope that the Celtics do not get the yips the way that sometimes they do or have in the past. And I could see Chicago being a veteran crafty team, punching them in the jaw in a weird way. And I also could see that with Miami, but there's no reason the Celtics should not sleepwalk through the first round. Toronto is weird for me in that the talent is there, the athleticism is there, the depth is there. It's just really bad juju. I mean, their coach is like actively divorcing them. And I think that's the same thing with the Hawks. Like the something is off and you can't play good basketball when something is off. So, man, I don't know. I just want to like linger on the Raptors for a second, but I don't really have like a cohesive thought because they haven't really shown us any reason to be fearful of them other than there's a lot of rangy guys, as was on display the other night, but Celtics were without three starters, so I don't know. Anyways, we can pause there because, again, the planned tournament will come and go, and this time next week we will be talking about less abstract. We'll know who the Celtics are going to play. And the Celtics will know first because, as the two seed, the Celtics will get the winner of the first play-in game and not the loser or the next one or whatever it is. So we'll know soon enough. Anyways, Jack Simone of Celtics blog with heavy.com of How About Them Celtics podcast. Thank you for stopping by. Alex, you missed a big win in Rec League. Go Wombats. I hope your ankle's feeling better. And I hope Ari's feeling better too. Soon. This episode of Celtics Thought Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network, and BetterHelp. You deserve to be happy. Thanks for listening. Like and subscribe. And we will see you next week.